Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 12. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more, all for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Haynes, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services in Southern California.
Welcome. This is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And I'm Nolan Haynes from Nolan Haynes Creative in Montclair, New Jersey.
Well, what is happening? Summer is in full session. Lots of warm sunshine, at least out here in Southern California. We're jumping in the swimming pool lots. And as promised with that earlier episode, This Is Where I Design, I have been doing happily most of my cooking at our outdoor kitchen on the grill.
Great. Well, we're getting outside more, of course. Living in a new neighborhood in Green Bay, we're getting more and more involved with the neighbors here. But very importantly, we just saw our daughter Lauren off as she embarks on her new life in Japan.
Ooh, not very exciting parental things that have to happen that we're, we're moving that direction.
Just out of the nest, right?
Yeah. Well, I think I'm the only one working, according to you guys. So I just got back from Minneapolis, Sandy. I had a training there, my once a year training in Minneapolis. But I actually have had a rack of ribs in the oven all day long. So there, we'll throw them on the grill at the end.
Oh, you cheat. You like do the pre-cook in the oven and then the grill at the very end?
Yeah, I don't have a smoker. So I just...
We have a smoker.
I put them on the rotisserie and just let them go on low for, hours.
Oh, yeah. Well, I do hours in the oven and then finish them on the grill.
Awesome.
Let's talk about news a little bit. I'd like to start if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, very importantly, the Presentation Guild just launched its benchmark salary survey. So if you're a presentationist, the Guild would like to welcome you to add your salary information to their database and in return have access to those report results, which will be published in October. You can either, there's going to be a link, I believe, Troy, in our recording notes, or just go to presentationguild.org and you can start from there.
Hey, I know we mentioned on the previous episode about the PowerPoint Zoom tool that's being released soon, and already it's on some of the insider builds. I've been happily experimenting with it. The news is that today, like literally the day this episode is releasing, at 2 p.m. Eastern, the Presentation Guild, speaking of the Guild, is hosting a free webinar. And this one's really, really impressive because it's got a Microsoft Program Manager doing a live demo of the actual tool. So it's not somebody, it's not a PR person saying, here's some tools we have. This is an actual guy in charge of coders, and I get to play moderator, so I'm pretty excited about that as well. So you can go to the presentationguild.org, right, Sandy?
Presentationguild.org? Yep. Exactly. And just a reminder, it's open to anyone. Usually these events are members only. However, anyone is welcome to join.
And there's some news on the Mac side. New feature was just released, Mac First. Which is unusual, usually comes on the PC. It's called Animated Background, or Animate Your Background. Mm-hmm. And this is essentially the Ken Burns effect. If anybody uses iMovie, there's an effect, there was literally an effect called the Ken Burns move, where you'll put an image in as the background, and then it will slowly zoom and pan, basically what Ken Burns does is in his documentaries. And so you can do that now on the Mac in PowerPoint. And it's first generation, so you don't have really any control over it. It's either on or off, but hopefully in the future we'll get a little more control. But it's very cool.
So you've
actually played with it?
With it,
right?
Yeah, I did. It's as simple as you put an image on a slide, you click from the format button, you click animate background, it makes it full screen, and then when you go into slideshow mode, it just slowly zooms and pans. And you can actually, there's one step before... When you say format or animate background, you get to select where on the image you want it to sort of focus on.
Oh, cool.
So like if it's a picture of of two people on a couch, you can, select one of the people and then it will slowly zoom towards that person. So it's a very cool effect.
Okay.
I got to play with it. Yeah, all the show Macs are not on the fast insider track, and the office one where we do all of our design stuff is, but I'm not in the office, so I haven't actually had a chance to play with it. So, okay, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you know what? It's a good thing that yours are not on the fast build. I do have to say, it's nice getting, you know, features right up front, but you also get some gunk. Just last week, along with Animate this background, I also got endless headaches in Outlook, which all of a sudden the cursor is not in the right place, and when I insert my signature, it's at the top of the email, not the bottom. And now, so I think they fixed most of that in like a release a couple days later. But yeah, that's pros and cons.
Do you know what I was hoping that background effect was, what? Troy? And I know you've wanted this for years. Animating, it would be the effect of animating videos across.
Yeah, slides endless loop, no matter. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Well, which we keep open.
Yep. Yeah, you can go back to PowerPoint 2000 and do it. It was just. It was a bug, but it worked, was kind of the anomaly. I mean, no, that's really what it was. When I talked to, I won't say a name, but when I talked to somebody at Microsoft, we talked all through, and I was like, I used to do this. And they're like, no, you didn't. And we went through and like, oh, that's really weird. We never actually knew that that actually happened. We just handed off the video and it did its thing. Well, it so happened that the limitation, I guess you'd call it, actually created the ability to run endless looping videos on a master slide. And that went away. So, you know, you just got to go back about to useless generation and you could do that. But
there you go.
All right. So today we're talking about the world of presentation and how it intersects with creative agencies, both in terms of what those agencies creating presentations in-house for themselves. We're going to talk about them, you know, forever pitching for the next job, and also in some cases selling presentation design to clients. And we're not talking about companies that specialize in presentation design like yours, Troy. But ad agencies, PR, digital marketing, and comms agencies, and that whole world. And some presentation professionals actually spend much of their career orbiting in this world, and I was certainly in it for a little bit. And let's talk about our own experiences. So here's my history. My first on-staff job was for a smallish marketing and comms agency in New York that was owned by Omnicom, one of the larger sort of holding companies. We had a handful of designers, but I was the presentation guy. So most of the work I did was for clients. We did a lot of work for TV networks and cable stations. I created the sales decks year after year for Nat Geo and Bravo and Fox News to go out and sell advertising. And I created decks for huge upfront events where NBC would introduce their new shows to advertisers and affiliates. After about 4 or 5 years there, I went to Edelman, which is the world's largest independent PR agency. They came to the realization that they were really good at communicating with words, but needed to get better at communicating visually. So I came in. And eventually I founded and ran their first department dedicated to presentation and visual comms with a staff of about four and dozens of freelancers. At first we did client work, like, you know, if one of our client CEOs was doing a TED talk, you know, we'd make the presentation. But eventually we focused mostly on supporting the new business efforts of the firm. You know, the powers that be looked at us doing, I don't know, let's say a $30,000 job for a client and wondered why we didn't have time for the $5 million agency of record pitch that they were trying to win. So while I was there, I actually ended up creating or overseeing almost 500 new business pitches for every type of industry and every type of client, because Edelman was that large. We basically touched every industry.
Hey, that's massive experience that just people have no concept of. That's really impressive.
Exactly. Well, like Nolan, I also came from the agency world. For 10 years, about, I worked at Minneapolis agencies in the account role, I should specify. I worked on account. I worked at Campbell Mithun, Carmichael Lynch on accounts like, and these are very glamorous, Zyrtec, Zithromax, and Depend. But I also was able to work on the Porsche account, where I was involved in launching the Porsche Cayenne, which that was really, really fun. Nice. But since leaving the ad agency world, where I was involved mostly in account work, but a lot of new business pitches, I've worked with agencies all over the country to help them pitch their business and to provide presentation design services for their clients.
Again, that's amazing experience that I don't get to draw on. So I guess if the topic is more about agencies doing pitches for new business, kind of as we're talking about, it's a bit outside my world. I work with several agencies. Most of our work is actually developing presentations for the end clients. So after they've made the pitch and gotten the work, one of the deliverables is generally presentation design. And not every agency has an internal department, at least an internal department that knows what they're doing, such as you are in charge of, Nolan. So we pick up a lot of work along those lines. So again, to me, it's kind of more of a client-based thing, a client end presentation. So I may learn a bit here as well.
Well, so what kind of agencies are we talking about?
Well, from my perspective, agencies come in literally shapes and sizes of every type. And as digital has taken over the world, agencies have rapidly changed to keep up with the times. You know, our madmen.
Not having so much experience with them, you can say that, but I know you don't.
They've changed enough to want to hire me.
Oh,
so it's a good thing. We had the Mad Men persona, which is phenomenal. We had the Bewitched, if you remember.
Oh, love Bewitched. You know, Darren 1 or Darren 2, your favorite?
Darren 1.
Darren, of course.
that's the ad agency model. We all learn, that's kind of, I think, a lot of what persona people have of it. I would say the same thing is, the Brady Bunch. Everybody knows what an architect is based on Mr. Brady.
Mm-hmm.
That's the architect that designed a house for 6 children with 2 bedrooms. Is that?
Yeah. Well, he only had 3 when he designed it, and then the other ones moved in. So advertising, I think, is where really things started, and then it's kind of evolved into the whole marketing PR agencies, and that evolved into digital and social media agencies. So, it's not these big, huge conglomerate entities anymore. There's a lot of smaller entities that call themselves agencies, rightfully so, but they don't have the same, if your persona is the Mad Men and Bewitched, it's probably a little different these days. And I think a really big thing is the integrated agency, saying that they'll do everything. And that's kind of where we come in, because part of that everything is presentation design for their end clients. And
yeah, definitely agencies do think they can do it all.
I don't know if they can. Good ones outsource, and I'm happy with that scenario.
Well, you mentioned that there's a lot of independent agencies. I would argue that over the last 20 years, most of those many independent agencies, as they grew, got bought up by large international holding companies like Omnicom and is it Publicis?
Publicis.
Okay. There you go. Wow. And these conglomerations, these holding companies, might own over 1,000 individual agencies doing all sorts of different work. In the Twin Cities market, I've seen the giants fall because they haven't been able to make the transition to the digital world, which from my perspective, of course, includes presentation design.
My first agency job was at an Omnicom-owned agency. These days, actually, I have regular training gigs with at least 2 of the major holding companies for their owned companies.
So what kind of presentation work are agencies doing?
So the first type, I would say, is their own internal work. I mentioned before, agencies are constantly pitching for the next job. That's one of the reasons why I think working for an agency can be so stressful. If you're in certain places where, it's for us too, right? We're always pitching for the next job in a way. We're always looking for the next job. But they're always pitching, and they're often up against 12 other agencies, despite the fact that, they might be owned by the same company. Sometimes you're actually pitching against one of your sister companies. So they have to stand out, and they have to show that they can be creative. It's an audition, basically, to say, oh, you want to hire us for creative work? Well, here's our presentation, and that presentation has got to be creative, if you're pitching for a creative role. Different agencies care about how their pitches look to different degrees. Some kind of phone it in, and others just get just insane and sort of wrapped up about it has to look perfect blah, blah, blah. And we have to spend all this energy and time and money on design. Some might have a staff designer take a break from client work to whip something up. And others might have a large, expensive design department dedicated to doing nothing but new business pitching, which was similar to my department at Edelman. And it was a major investment for the company to keep that running.
Well, like I was saying earlier, I like the pitch ones only because when they actually land a client, they need presentations for that and clients' content. And I think that's mainly where TLC comes in, or most of our agency work from this conversation, is we work on end client presentations. So you keep pitching those things, agencies, because we'll keep supporting you at the tail end where you need it for the real client.
Yeah. I mean, and also I think clients have gotten so much more demanding on agencies in those pitches. And I do not think this is a good trend, that basically clients are saying, you know, jump, and the agencies are saying how high. And
right.
I also think agencies a lot of time go after stuff they just really shouldn't. But this, one of the reasons they're doing that is because now if they're part of this big holding company, they're responsible for, you know, growing their business 5-7%, whatever it is, every year. They have to keep bringing in more income. So the last thing they're going to do is turn down a pitch. So I've been on pitches that I said, you know, we're not going to win this. Like, this is not our specialty. We're not prepared. And like, oh, well, we have to go at it. It's like, just not worth it.
Well, I know I kind of alluded to it. I've kind of mentioned it, but what is everybody? So I'm more curious here what you and Nolan and Sandy get to say about this, and I'll kind of chime in anything extra, but what are our own experiences working with agencies?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I literally grew up in the ad agency world on the account side, so I'm familiar with that environment, the ad agency environment, enough so that I understand the mindset of the folks coming to me to create templates and presentations for their clients. Like Nolan said, they've put themselves in the position of being order takers, especially when it comes to presentations, because quite frankly, their clients often know more about PowerPoint than the agency creatives do. Huh. And that brings me to a rant, and I don't want to be negative because—
Please, rant away. I love when Sandy rants.
but it's
the most pleasant rant.
Yeah.
Genteel rant.
Yeah, genteel. But I'm astonished to find that the lack of knowledge around presentation software, design, and messaging, because it also— I'm astonished that they don't want to gain expertise around that. I look at it this way. I bet 90% of agencies' clients operate on the Microsoft Office system.
Easily.
Yep. And what is lost at that level? It's all control of the brand. People are creating their own Word documents. They're creating their own presentations. All the millions of dollars that are spent on high-level advertising and social media are lost at the ground level when agencies fail to at least attempt to control branding. So anyway, like I said, their loss is our gain.
Yeah. And I mean, you're right. And I'm going to generalize, but I think a lot of creative agencies not only have little knowledge, you know, on how to create and sell presentation services, they also don't have much respect for it either. And, you know, there are absolutely exceptions. We have friends who are doing amazing, respected work in-house for some agencies, which I won't mention. But, you know, this has to do, I think, more with graphic designers in general turning their nose up at anything that isn't created with Adobe.
Right.
And that goes back a lot of times to their design educations. That's a whole other podcast. But honestly, for me, the primary reason I left Edelman was that we had started becoming an internal service rather than an internal partnership with our colleagues. So, you know, at first we'd work really closely with the team pitching for a big piece of business and come up with all types of creative ways of presenting and pitching, which went well beyond PowerPoint at times. We did a lot of print and digital stuff, solutions and live, you know, solutions and technology. But by the end, we were just getting calls from, you know, a junior account exec saying, oh, I saw you do this amazing thing for so-and-so. I want that. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that meant no partnership. It also meant no more innovation. You know, if we're only going to do what you saw before, and it may not even be appropriate, it got less fun.
So, Nolan, were they not pitching this amazing discipline that you brought to the table?
To their clients?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that was another thing. So when I was when I first got there, we did start doing client work that had never really been done before, and we were making money. We were selling presentation services, and that's at the point where they said, wow, we've got this amazing ability. The agency wants to hire you for our own pitches. So we did that, and then, you know, they never hired anybody in my absence, and then they said, you know, we don't need to sell presentation. And just because they didn't understand it. And it's frustrating. There was just so much that I could do, you know, for a a 600 person office, I'm not going to be doing client work in every business pitch as well. So
exactly. Understood.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I think it can be a real revenue stream, but if the agencies aren't going to do it, you know, the three of us will certainly be happy to pick it up.
Exactly. I'm sure lots of people listening are happy to pick it up. It's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for TLC, working with an agency so far has primarily been working with a client. You know, we get a presentation request, we get an outline, a message. You know, there's the pros. The pros of working with an agency is they've already developed a creative direction they want to take things. They already have messaging in place because that's part of their branding assessment for the end client. And there's assets that are usually in place. You know, so the agency client for us is kind of nice because those projects have just a lot less ramp up time. And after that, it's just another, you know, how do we create where's the end audience? Where's this being used? What are the technical needs? And let's build in a presentation messaging that works for the end use. So again, very different scenario. And I don't want to let go of the fact that that designers in general turn their nose up at presentation design. And it's changed a lot. I'll just throw this in there because when I did director type work, Adobe director, so it wasn't an Adobe product, which is now since more or less gone, it was very respected. It was awesome. And when I was able to recreate those same things in PowerPoint and actually give it over to a client, let them be able to do their own edits, it was always accepted by the client better than it was
the creative
mm-hmm. you know, industry. So anyways, yeah, we should talk about that later, and it might have to be heavily edited.
No, I completely agree with you, Troy. I do a lot of my own creative concepting, but I love getting branded materials from a client and leveraging those from in a presentation environment versus stuff that they've already done in the print world.
Yeah, we've all seen branding guides, right? When a company mm-hmm. does, when a company has a new logo and identity or whatever, very often they're accompanied by the sometimes very large branding guides, right? Here's how you make posters, here's how you do it in marketing materials, here's what the web should look like, here's what mobile. And then there's always like a one page on here's what presentation should look like. And
these are
And these big documents are created by the agencies, and everything looks beautiful. Oh, that's great print. That's great web. That's great stationery and business cards. And then you get to that page or two of a presentation. It's like, huh?
Yeah, let's slap a cover slide on there. That
right. or their charts. Font. Very often they're beautiful, elegant charts that are just impossible to recreate on a real world scenario.
Yes, yes.
Okay, what exactly. else are we talking about?
All right, well, let's rates.
Rates, yeah. I want to talk about rates.
Okay, I want to hear it.
Well, you start, Nolan.
Okay. So, rates, we're talking about the rates agencies will charge their clients, not the rates that we would charge to do work.
Exactly. That's what I meant. I've never had an agency bat an eye at my fees.
No, because there's so few of you and they're in a bind and mm-hmm. they need to get it done and they mm-hmm. clearly can't do it internally. All right.
Can we say like a rate of what we think agencies generally roll out to their clients? Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been in that world for a little bit, but $250 and up an hour, I would say, is not uncommon. Okay. And that might just be just for a designer's time on the invoice, right? You have to add in project management and creative direction mm-hmm. and anything else they can get away with. I mean, if you're going to a large agency for presentation or any type of graphic design, it's pricey.
I would say that's more than we bill out, but I'd also yeah. say that agencies do have a lot of manpower and overhead. Some of it really, really good and necessary. Some of it, I think those rates are very different than a design studio because I don't have account executives. Right. I don't pay for a Manhattan office lease.
There's a Wall Street share price to
that. Oh yeah. That would be a huge one. That would be mm-hmm. huge. So
yeah, I'm sure we will talk about rates at some point, but yeah. What do they say that if you're not getting turned down on your rate, you're not charging enough?
I know.
If you're not getting turned down 10, 15% of the time?
Okay. So in your experience, from what you deal with and seeing agencies, because we're all kind of on the outside. Okay. I'm really on the outside. Sandy was on the inside. And Nolan, mm-hmm. you've left it. But think of an agency. Are they industry driven? Are they specialty driven? Where do they function, or what do they go after?
I think it's all over the map. A lot of presentation designers in New York City work for smaller agencies that specialize in producing big events, like product launches or company meetings, and then at the Same time, 2 weeks ago, I gave a training to the heads of about 15 marketing and ad agencies that only work in the healthcare field. So, you know, specialty driven and industry driven. It's kind of, I think it's all over the place from my perspective.
Well, when I first started in advertising, it was, you were at a B2B firm, which is, you know, business to business, or then I moved into the big time, business to consumer, when I got to work on Depend. But today, I see a trend towards specialty driven as the smaller, more nimble firms grasp digital more readily than the traditional big firms.
I could see that. I think I lean towards agency being more aligned with an industry, but that may be just how I interact with agencies that, you know, we work with, because I only see, we only see a group involved with a specific industry. So maybe it's healthcare or automotive. I guess product launches could be an industry in that sense. And I'm sure they have other groups focused on other clients and other industries, but we don't run in that circle. So, you know, one automotive client could say, hey, you did this. We got another, you know, that same group. Hey, we want to work on this one. So maybe I'm just seeing it a little bit more one-sided of seeing their industry aligned. But I also totally agree that they're smaller based on digital. I think digital has allowed a lot of things to happen at a smaller headcount level and a smaller overhead and sizing.
Yeah, and digital is in many places driving an agency. Even a traditional ad agency often now is kind of driven by the digital department because they're so successful, they have all the work, and that's where the world's going. So, and I saw that internally, how digital was doing so well, they started to sort of drive the rest of the firm. Okay, Sandy, I got to ask you. I always ask people who worked in the ad agency. Now, I know you didn't work back in the days of Mad Men, but you worked in the past in the ad agency. Mm-hmm. Did you see anything? What was it like? Were the cocktails flowing? I got to know.
All the stories I could tell you. No, you know what? I think I was on the cusp of that. When I started in my first ad job, they were still smoking in the offices. And that, you know, just to give you an idea. So there was that Mad Men. We'd meet in the leather lounge and have a cocktail when we were brainstorming, that sort of thing.
The leather lounge.
I know, the leather
lounge. I caught that too. Oh.
I know.
But the big bashes that where people were really stupid, those were on their way out. And I would say by the time I left, it had cleaned up quite a bit. I did not watch Mad Men, believe it or not. I'm one of those people.
Really? I'm a little offended, having had nothing to do with the show myself.
Yeah, that's funny. I think I watched one episode, and maybe that was a little realistic.
Oh, Sandy, have you not seen the Kodak Carousel scene?
I have not.
Oh, my God. So, Troy, do you know what
that's
I'm talking about?
Totally iconic, yes.
Oh, I show this in trainings as the best presentation ever.
I know what you're talking
about. Okay, you have
seen it. I know exactly what you're talking about. Absolutely. You're right.
Created an emotion with a photo.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Everything is incredible about that. So, I show that all the time in trainings and watch that. A couple years ago, I got to meet George Lois, who was an old ad guy, and he started a couple big agencies. He supposedly was one of the models for Don Draper. Ooh. And you know, not everybody knows his name, but you've seen his work. You know that famous Muhammad Ali cover with the arrows in him, mm-hmm. in Esquire? That was him. And mm-hmm. he did a lot of Esquire covers and a lot of other advertising, and it's just this old guy. And he's written a bunch of books, and I got to spend a little time with him talking, and just loved listening to what it was like back in the day.
Speaking of agencies, we've referred to them in many ways, but what are their names, or what names do agencies go by these days?
Like what do we call them besides? I mean, agencies are an umbrella. Like, we do a lot of work with PR firms, and I'd lump them into the same thing. They're an agency. I guess I don't know how to define agency, but for, you know, PR firms would be that. I'm not certain how each is defined as a business entity, but for TLC, we treat them both the same. PR firms, ad agencies, even internal MarCom departments, because they all just kind of have that agency work. They are the middleman for us.
Yeah, and PR agencies do a lot more than they used to. It's not just you know, press releases and bailing people out when they say something stupid.
Honestly. Exactly.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, I'm thinking of agency of record. They're that large firm that the big company hires to do all their marketing communications or all their advertising, or it's a marketing firm to do focus on their product marketing. Or again, we talked about PR firm or design firm. They're all over the place. Oh, consultancy.
Yeah.
To me, a smaller entity as well, kind of speaking of size. Maybe that's just me.
We mentioned sort of size, and you mentioned before, my wife works with this great agency in the city that is two guys, and if she needs a video or digital or whatever, they just assemble a team for that project and, you know, take care of it and art direct it and produce it, and they're amazing. I mean, she works with a lot of different agencies at all different levels, but that one in particular, it's great, just two guys.
It's all reputation and making sure your name's known. I think that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. Okay, any last things about agencies? Because I know there's a ton of, it's a big topic. We're kind of approaching it a little bit differently. I've got a few little things to throw out there, but everybody just, yeah, let's just kind of wrap up by throwing out different ideas and things.
Sandy, you said earlier that, you know, a lot of times agencies have no real idea what they're doing when it comes to presentation. Here's a question. Can you tell when you get, this is kind of a loaded question. Can you tell when you get a deck or a file if it was created by an ad agency or any agency, I should say?
Well, yes. Yes, usually I can. That wasn't rhetorical, right? You were looking for a real answer. No, there are a lot of obvious things. Many times they're picking some font that will not work.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And the slide masters are not really slide masters. They've pasted a photo on top of the slide. As a matter of fact, if I'm supposed to create a presentation based on that bad template, I usually make it a prerequisite that I rebuild the template before I even start the presentation. And my argument is I can be more efficient, and then moving forward, their client, the agency's client, or my client can now edit that presentation more easily. They have a template that they can start.
That is a hard conversation, totally relevant, but I guess I'd say we don't win that one as much as I would like.
Okay.
What, rebuilding?
Yeah. And it's exactly what Sandy was saying. I say, listen, this project with the template, it's not a template. It's a bunch of slides and there's no consistency, or all the features in PowerPoint that allow presets are not set up to be presets with what you want. So we're going to have to go manually set those on every single element we design. So we're going to add on 15 hours to this project, or we could take 10 hours and rebuild the template and you just come out ahead. And it just doesn't, you know, I try and approach it. Maybe that's my problem. Is I approach it from a financial standpoint of this is going to be better for your billable. And what you said, Sandy, is it's better for everybody in the long run. That's a really good thing to say, but yes,
it works. I mean, and most people understand. I'm sure there are a few times it hasn't, but it certainly makes my job a lot easier. But it's all based on, you don't really have a template. I'm sorry, but thank you for sharing, but it's not real.
We need to define template at another stage. You know what I look for, Sandy or Nolan, I should say, when I first get a presentation, I actually do two quick checks. I do the layout dropdown and I just see what the layouts are named. First of all, if the master slide is called office template, you know, whatever, I know it wasn't actually customized. And if there's a whole bunch of random layouts in there or things that just shouldn't exist or duplicates, so that's a big one. And the second thing I look for is I go into the file and properties, because usually if an agency does it, they're usually trying to brand themselves, so they have their agency name in the, you know, in the formatted list. So I look at those before I even look at the slides. So I'm kind of prepared for what I'm going to see.
I love it.
And Sandy, I think you mentioned it, but not having individual elements, just basically doing something in InDesign or Illustrator or Photoshop and then pasting this full thing. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this, but if the reason for building things natively and in pieces and all that is so that at the, you know, down the line, a year down the line, oh, we need to change the logo or we need to, you know, shift this color. Well, if you build it correctly, that's a 3-second change. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, you know, web pages in CSS. Oh, we need to change the color. Great. We'll just, you know, make this code change and it ripples through and it's done. But if you basically hard code everything, you know, it's going to take forever.
A year down the line, try 2 days down the line. We just encountered this yesterday where presentation goes off tomorrow and we get a request, hey, we need to change these quick, you know, we need to quickly change these words just because we've, you know, refocused. And it's this beautiful slide with background imagery and support imagery. And it's kind of a word cloud looking one where there's bigger words and smaller words. We said it can't be done. This was supplied by your internal department as flat art. It's a JPEG. We can't change the words on it. We'd have to recreate the whole thing. Great. Can you rechange it all? No, we don't have the art. We don't have the time and we don't have a budget anymore. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that 3 second thing, you know, 2 days later, the client even asked for it and it never got changed. It just couldn't happen before the meeting. So
there you go. To answer the question.
Bad process right there.
Exactly.
Not a best practice. Maybe that's the better way to say it.
There you go. Not a best practice.
Yeah. And look, we're sort of bad-mouthing him, but there really are some agencies, I think, that do good presentation work.
Absolutely.
And if you are thinking of going to one, here's what I would just say. You know, you've got an agency, they do all your advertising or digital work or whatever, and you want them to do a presentation. Ask to see, you know, some work they've done, but also... ideally, this would be an agency that is doing just presentation work as projects, in addition to the other stuff. It's not always wrapped into something else. So I had a client recently that had to do a big web redesign or something, and they also needed a new logo as part of it. And they came to me for the logo, and knowing that I don't do web, don't do digital, and I said, well, yeah, we can do the logo, we can do the identity. Or if you're more comfortable, you know, I totally get it. You know, you can use the web agency if they do it as well. I said, but if you're going to go with them for the logo, you need to ask A to C past logo work and also ask if they do just identity on its own in addition to web. Because if they're just a web house and somebody asks them, hey, can you do a logo? And they're like, yeah, sure. We've got designers. They can whip something up. They just want to do it as a value add. That's not their specialty. And it means you're not going to get the best researched and thought out identity as you would if you went to a place that sometimes only does that. So does that make sense?
Yeah,
that is
absolutely.
Great advice.
Yeah. And so he ended up going with them and I haven't seen it yet. I don't know what the story is.
But you feel really good about your great advice.
I do.
No, that's awesome.
I think along those lines, I'm trying to figure out how to say this without saying stuff outside my contract, but we have a agency and I won't even say what type of agency we work with. And the person that always brings us the work openly tells clients when it comes to presentation design, yes, we can supply that. We have partnered with this presentation design studio. This is all they do. And they do all of our work. So they actually leverage our reputation right into their thing. But they followed up with, and you can contact them direct, but we have preferred pricing. So I'm like, okay, you know, but they literally are smart enough, I think, to say, we can provide this at the absolute top level. It won't be just one of our designers that isn't focused on this. It'll be something. And they use it as part of their sales pitch. And maybe that's why they sell a lot more of those services than other similar agencies.
I think that's a mature of them. I actually work with a research agency a lot, and I do their presentations for their end clients as well. I don't know if they exactly say that or sell it, but I end up talking directly to the client at some point. And that's a double-edged sword. I did one thing for somebody else a while ago where I was hired by somebody, but then ended up working for the end client, and we had sort of our initial budget with the person I signed my contract with, but then the end client kept wanting change after change. And I said, I went back to my person. I said, are you okay with me taking direction? Because this keeps going and there's, you know, I'm just going to keep billing hours whenever they want something, I'm going to do it. And they're like, yeah. We just need to make the client happy, you know, whatever they want. Well, sure enough, at the end, when they billed the client, after I billed them, they billed the client, they got pushback and they came back to me and I said, but you told me to take direction and to do what they wanted. So it's on you.
Hey, I do have a question of both of you then. So we're talking about agencies. What percent of your business is agency versus corporate?
You know, okay, I'll start, Nolan. You think.
Okay.
Because I think I got an easy answer that I can't answer because I guess you got to define corporate because we have a fairly large percentage of work that's for corporate internal MarCom departments.
Okay.
And I count those as agency work because
okay.
they're getting the request and passing it off to us as a subcontractor to say, can you fulfill this specialty design need? So I would actually have a hard time breaking that apart because a lot of our larger clients are directly related or internal to the corporation. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. I've never broken it out like that. So I just consider them corporate clients, and I would say 90% of my work is done in that capacity.
Yeah, I would say about half my training is for agencies, just because I'm sort of a regular trainer for, as I said, one or two of the large ones, so they give me a healthy amount of work. On the design side, okay. Maybe 15-20%.
Okay.
Maybe less than that.
Okay, I was just curious.
Oh. I turned down
a lot of agency work because chances are, you know,
it's last minute.
Happens.
Let me guess, it's last minute.
Yeah, it comes in. It's like, hey, you know, wonder if you help us out. Sure. Can you start tonight and work straight for the next 2 weeks on this pitch or whatever? No. I can't,
right.
You know, I'm not
set
up
on site for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. And I do a lot of work for nonprofits and foundations, and I always tell them, I just told somebody like an hour ago, their last minute, whenever they call with the last minute, they're like, oh, I know this isn't much lead time. Their last minute is like 6 to 8 weeks.
I know.
Oh, so you're saying it's a good thing.
Oh, it's a great thing for a foundation.
I know what you mean. Yes.
Yeah, versus corporate and agency, which is last minute is like now.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally start now.
Let me just wrap us up talking about agencies so we can move on and get things done here. But hopefully everyone will find something helpful about this conversation. Actually, I've made a ton of notes just because you have different perspectives than I do,
right.
Which is really unique.
I made some notes too. Leather lounge.
Yeah.
Just picturing it in my head.
Hey, stay with us because we have some great presentation pro tips and fun tech tips coming up.
Hear the music.
Okay, Sandy, you're up first.
Okay. Well, as my pro tip, I'm going to remind everyone, as I started this podcast with the Presentation Guild survey, I would like all the pros out there, professional presentation pros in the audience, to participate in the Guild's benchmark salary survey. So please go to presentationguild.org or follow the link directly to the survey that we've got in our show notes.
I think that's going to be really awesome information.
I think so. It's going to help everybody, all presentationists, become more valuable to our community and the organizations that hire us.
So in PowerPoint, presentation pro tip from me, in PowerPoint and all Office apps in general, on the upper right of the ribbon, there's a little up arrow icon. I guess it's not really an arrow. It's the little carrot symbol.
Mm-hmm.
When you need a bigger slide area, or maybe it's just a viewable area, if you're reviewing a presentation flow and slide sorter, you really don't need to see the ribbon. You can click that up arrow to hide the ribbon tools. And you get another row of thumbnails. So, and to get it back, you just click on any tab, and then, you know, that little up arrow is replaced by a little thumbtack icon. You click that and make it visible. I'm just amazed that when I show people this, and actually I'm talking internally, I just showed this to one of my design team. They were like, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about that. And it was like an eye opener just this week. So anyways, I'm going to have a blog post tomorrow on this. August 17th, check the PowerPoint blog. I'll just do a quick tutorial because it's a cool tool that isn't thought of. So there, presentation.
I don't use it at all. I always have my ribbon there. So that's a great idea.
I use it especially in slide sorter view when I'm trying to talk through the flow of a presentation.
Oh.
A lot of times I'm projecting slides up on the big screen anyways, and everybody wants to see it. And they don't need to see those tools. They just need to focus on the slides. So I use it quite a bit, actually. You know, the other place I use it is on my Surface when it's a touch interface. It's nice to get a little bit more room and a few more things out of the way.
Cool. Mine involves double clicking too. Everybody knows the format painter, right? Really helpful for copying and pasting the format for a text box or a shape or something. And this works across all Office apps. What most people don't know is you can double click that format painter. So if you have, let's say, one circle, you know, formatted the way you want to apply it to a whole bunch of others on the page, what most people do is they click the format painter and they go to one shape, and then they go back to the format painter and they click the next shape, back to the format painter. But if you double click that, you can load it up and then just go click, 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 mm-hmm. all the way around on all your shapes. And when I include this in almost all my trainings, and last time I did it like last week, and somebody shrieked. They literally shrieked because they were like, because if you don't know this, and you do this stuff all the time, you are just killing yourself, like wasting all this time. So once people sort of see they can do this, they shriek sometimes.
That is an awesome pro tip.
I think it's awesome. I use it all the time, but don't use it in slide layouts, in your master for text for placeholders.
No automated formatting in the master layouts.
Does
XML
not work.
Files get messed up.
Mm-hmm.
All right, tech tips. This is totally a summer tip from me, and it's techie. It really is. If you like to grill, which I love to do, and I'm in SoCal, so Southern California, so we grill year-round. But this is my great find and purchase at the State Fair this year. Every year we go to the State Fair. We've gone literally for a decade or so on the 4th of July, because they have I'm in San Diego. They have a great fireworks show. The Navy band plays patriotic music. It's a really cool 4th of July thing. So part of the State Fair is, in addition to seeing all the livestock and stuff that's not typical in, you know, San Diego and LA and all those metropolitan areas, is all the tchotchke sales floor areas. You know, you get to go through building after building of selling everything. And we always buy something. We got to find a something that's our cool find. And a lot of them are really good. So this year, I think it's Kevlar. It's like a Kevlar sheet of, it looks like a big piece of black paper. And it's Kevlar, so it can't catch fire and it can't melt. And you just lay it on the grill, right on the grate. And that way you can cook vegetables and fish and potatoes and anything else so you don't want to fall through the grates. Literally amazing. I've been using it.
So that's safe? Kevlar's safe?
I hope so. They say
who knows?
It came direct from China with no specific. I don't know. It's really, really awesome. So, you know.
So you just take the sheet of asbestos and you just lay it right over.
Me second guess myself. The sales pitch was awesome. It was indoors, so it was an electric griddle, you know, with the grid lines.
Sure.
And they literally had it down, and they grilled pancakes. So they poured the pancake batter on there and flipped it over. So he had a pancake with the grill marks on it. I was just like, this is amazing. Anyways, I bought it. I've been using it nonstop. I think it's phenomenal. And despite possible safety concerns, I think it's okay. I'm done. That was my techie tip. I'm reconsidering.
I love it. I love it. And I know
that's
Jeff would love it too.
I'm gonna head right to Amazon.
It's a guy thing. Similar. Well, my tip is about what not to do or what not to buy. I was all excited. I wanted to recommend the sexy travel monitor that my brother-in-law bought. It was the Asus MB168B Plus.
Oh, the USB ones where you just plug it in a USB port. It's not really
exactly.
A video. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's no power cord or anything like that. You just plug it right in. I bought it for my Surface Book. And I ended up spending, I think, 6 hours troubleshooting why it would not work. And eventually found out that it's a power, it's a power sourcing issue where not enough power from the book, from the USB drive is, charging the monitor. So anyway, there was a workaround, but by then I was so frustrated, I just decided to send it back. So I would say if you want to use that monitor, you have a Surface Book, they don't play well together.
Sounds like me and my Samsung soundbar and wireless speakers.
Oh no.
Just send
it
back.
Sandy, I don't know if this totally would solve it, because I'm not cool enough to have a Surface Book. We just have the Surface computers.
Mm-hmm.
But Surface Book's high on my absolute need list, I think. I bought kind of a fleet of the Toshiba USB monitors. So again, it's just USB. It uses display monitor driver, which is a universal driver, mm-hmm. Mac and Windows and everything else. And I use that on my Surface. I don't know if the Surface Book has different power. I don't know what the USB difference could be between the two of them. But anyways, I do use the Toshiba one. It's travel. It's really funny because I pull that out with a Surface and it's like the monitor is actually bigger size than the Surface computer. But
that's funny.
I do use a USB powered and connection monitor all the time, because a second monitor is just worth its weight when you travel.
Yeah, I really want one.
But not that one, apparently.
Not that one. And I wonder also, you know, how the Surface Book, the monitor is detachable.
Uh-huh.
While I didn't see anything in my research about it, I still wonder if it hasn't something to do with that.
I don't know. I'm going to look into it.
But I don't know.
I'll let you know when we're cool enough to have Surface Books.
Thank you. Because I thought of calling you. I thought you've got to have a solution to this.
All right. So mine is also an as seen on TV thing or something that should be. It's called the TechMat Air Vent Grip for phones, and use it in your car. Essentially what it is, it's two pieces. It's a metal shim that you insert into the back in between your phone and whatever phone case you have. So it is adhesive if you want to put it on, but you don't have to because it'll hold tight. And it's super, super thin. It doesn't add any other weight, doesn't add any, you know, you don't see it. And then the other part is this little mini hockey puck that's a really strong magnet with these like claws on the back. And you stick the claws in your car vent. And then you always are able to just take your phone out and magnetize it to your vent. It's incredible. There's no like clips or like ugly big holders, and you don't even have to think about having the right case on, or, you know, other attachment on your phone. It's always there. We have it in all our cars. You know, whenever we need to use Waze or whatever, we just stick it right there. It's really low profile. And it's
if
like
you didn't catch that, Nolan has a Monday car and a Tuesday car and a weekend car.
$5.
How big is the, you said a hockey puck. How big is the magnet thing?
Oh, it's like, it's a mini hockey puck. It's like an inch and a half across, or maybe 2 inches.
Oh, max. So it's small.
It's super small. It's just a small little strong magnet. And then the shim, it comes with two of them, like a square one and a circle one. And so you could put it in multiple phones if you had it. It's brilliant. Like my whole family's gotten them. My brother turned me onto it. Then my dad got one, and we got one for my mom.
It's seriously strong enough to hold the phone in like a vertical hanging thing?
Vertical or horizontal. You can flip it around. It also depends where on your phone you put that shim.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Like if you put it smack in the center, it makes turning horizontal to vertical really easy.
Do we have a link for that? Oh, you do have a note for it.
I threw a link in there. It's
Amazon, like, or did you go buy it from the site?
You just Amazon. I mean, and there are other competitors. I mean, there are other copycats, but the one, like, I think the original is called TechMat. TechMatte, all one word.
I am totally looking at the link you put in the notes. I'm going to order these.
They're fantastic and so cheap.
This is Troy from TLC Creative Services Design Studio team focused on presentation design. If you're looking for presentation messaging and design or show site graphic ops that are real presentation designers, check us out at tlccreative.com.
This is Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if you're interested in training on site for presentation or data viz, give me a call or go to the site nolanhamescreative.com. Lots of ways to track me down and stalk me.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website at presentationwiz.biz and my blog at PPTWiz blog, or just search for Sandra Johnson PowerPoint in your web browser and you'll learn all kinds of things about me. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.